Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm a social self-prez 9-wing-1-9-6-3.
Hi, I'm Kaisa. I'm a sexual social 9-wing-8 with the 3 and 5 fixes.
Hi, I'm Sammy. I'm a self-prez social 9-wing-1 with 5-wing-4 and 4-wing-3 fixes.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll have introductions. Hi, welcome to Synsomnia. It's just Sammy and I today because Kaisa, I have to think of another story. Kaisa is in a training program for the training of dragons.
Yes, she is. And we're very proud of her. This is a huge step for her.
It
very
is.
Excited.
It's another step on her life path of becoming the queen of the Fae. She needs to learn how to train dragons. And so that's what she's doing up on a mountain somewhere. And so we're hijacking the episode to talk about object relations of the body center and how that might show up in dreams. And so what I'm thinking too, that if we wanted to split this up into parts, that this can be part one, just explaining the object relations, playing around with it. And then part two, we can talk about our dream incubations that we did for it to see where it's living in our psyches.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, because if we just dive right into our dreams, it might be too much to take on without the context of what we're talking about. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can put it into practice after we define what it is we're practicing.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yay. Okay, so I think I'm going to also put a link in this episode to some of Josh's and John's classes on the Centers of Intelligence, because I'm kind of piggybacking off of his idea in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of what inspired the idea that I could see in dreams and my own experiences. So briefly, if you want the full thing, I'll have the link for you to check that out. But briefly, what I was drawn to about his idea with the body center is that, he talked about it like it is our holding environment, like how we like to be held. And so like each body type is kind of responding, reacting to how they feel they're being held or not. And that's kind of based on the idea that when we were born, we were first born as just like a sensation feeling of like form. There's no thought or, you know, heart there yet. It's just we are born and we feel like, we sense immediately. I keep using the word feel. So, but I mean like sense as in body sensations. So we're just a wash of sensation experiences. Does that make sense? Is that what you got from that too? I just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like body center is just the entire sensory field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, looking at my notes from the actual class, and yeah, that's like what I had.
Cool. Okay, good. I'm not just like making that up. I did not take notes, if you can't tell. but yeah, so what I was drawn to was the idea of holding. Like it's kind of, you know, as a 9 and 9-wing-1, we're both 9-wing-1s, we can be kind of attuned to how we're being held. Like if someone isn't seeing us, in the right way, that little one wing is just like, ooh, I don't like that. And you kind of just become like irritated. Like it feels like a violation essentially. But the thing with nine is that it's like, it is already open and porous to everything. It's not really like it's letting things come in and out. And with a one wing, it's kind of filtering things in this way, like bad versus good, you know, that kind of superego of the one.
Yeah. And I guess like the thing with nine that's probably like exacerbated by the one wing is they only want to be open to the positive holding, the holding that feels really good and that's like hopeful and very pleasant. And they can really pick and parse through what feels good to them and can be kind of discriminating about it with the one wing. Because like one, there's kind of like an over-focus on an intention around like sensory irritants and impurity. So yeah, because I feel like nine, we are letting things in and out, but we're also like becoming numb by dissociating from what's unpleasant. So we're not actually letting the unpleasant in at all.
Right. Or it's there and we can't like identify, it's just unpleasant. And yeah, then we're like, we don't understand how to set a boundary up. Like if it's just unpleasant, you kind of like, you ignore it or you positive reframe it or something rather than being like, oh, this is actually news to me that I should be putting up a boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's even with nine wing eight as well, kind of having that as well in some mm-hmm. form. But yeah. So to expand on that in the dream realm and what we've discovered with the body center and how it's kind of blurring boundaries and such in the unconscious, what I was drawn to with the idea of holding is not only are we kind of like assessing how others are holding us or like what our sensory experience is it good, is it bad, blah, blah, blah. I think as well, our dreams can show and even life experiences can show what we are unconsciously asking others to hold for us. So the way that I can kind of break this down is that the idea, like, you know, the body center being a container, it holds our experiences and our like perspectives of our experience. So like, what are we associating with? We already discovered too with anger, just how much, you know, a complex that has kind of become blurred in boundaries can give us information about our own path of individuation, that like this is something that hasn't been resolved in the psyche and wants to be resolved so we can move on and use it as creative fuel rather than destructive fuel. So basically this all happens in the container, and you know, you kind of have to establish a strong container to understand and work through these experiences. And I think that like our personal container can be, its boundaries can be confused with the external world. So that's where shadow kind of comes in this. Both, I don't know, not even both, like with all the instincts holding some kind of shadow that we're mm-hmm. projecting into those things as parts of ourselves that we have like rejected or that we've projected, yeah, into other people. So what I think the idea then of the body center is to not only make the container strong, but also to make it large enough to grow it that we can hold these parts of ourselves, even the unpleasant ones. Mm-hmm. Which also I'm just gonna like kind of give star power to Josh on this episode even more. Did you listen to his episode on focusing?
No, not yet.
Okay. I'm going to link that in there. Yeah. I'm going to link that into there too, because that's just kind of like a really abstract but awesome process of getting in touch with kind of like the space that you're trying to make for these sensory experiences that sort of turn into archetypal energies that are like present with you, and your ego's kind of constantly ignoring them. Like, it's allowing them to come forth and you're making space for them. So there's really no like objective to like move forward. It's just like, can I like widen my boundaries to include these things that I'm typically projecting into the external world on people or things or places or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just throwing that out there too. But yeah, I think that through recognizing that we are unconsciously asking other people to hold things that are kind of like shadow opposite of us, or, you know, shadow in the way that it's the golden shadow, it's good things that we're not making space for either. And I want it to be a bit more nuanced than good and bad, but like, you get what I'm saying. Like, can we kind of expand our bodies and like hold those things in our container rather than outcasting them? And that's mm-hmm. where, when we learned with anger, feeling like an outcast is that, you know, outcasted parts of ourselves not really being seen as a part of ourselves.
Yeah.
So I think the types have very specific ways they are going to be doing this. This is also, I wanted to say before we get into like the types, a couple of things I wrote here. Okay. Yeah. Let me read. I'm just going to read what I wrote because it's easier. I'm wondering if the mysterious location of memory has something to do with the body. The body keeps the score. It remembers the sense impressions of things and can store them to feel unresolved by the ego. Badness, rage, disharmony, rejection, and similar sensations respond to events that signal to the ego that this is bad, even if it isn't. This overstepping boundaries becomes an unconscious identification with the other person, place, object, being the source of the bad or sensitive subject matter that continues to be projected externally. Along with the work of anger and establishing a container, looking at instinctual relationships can help a person truly identify what or who it is they're interacting with. Even good sensations can put places, food, good friends, or partners as gods, holding incredibly vulnerable and sensitive parts of us that are being unloved and outcast by the ego, only to be accepted and loved by something outside of ourselves. And then I go on to say, being patient with and holding this anger or intense overbearing feeling that becomes provoked within us can allow us to access the memory of who we really are, what we've lost, what we've outcasted, what we're asking another person or thing to hold for us. Reconnecting to our present felt sense can begin to signal a sense of safety in situations that have a fuller opportunity to be associated with authentically. So then just kind of like overlapping with the body center, overlapping with sexual, makes me kind of sense that this is why the blurred boundaries are happening. Like, this is where each type, not just nine, but each body type is merging with their environment, with people, with whatever. Like, it doesn't always have to be sexual, obviously, but even with sexual instinct, like, that is where, like, things especially can get reactive. Like, if you imagine, like, say, let's make the classic, like, your partner's cheating on you, or you imagine your partner seeing someone else or something like that, you can feel as if possibly, like, I'm thinking of maybe nine or one, like, you can feel that as violating, like, that person being with someone else makes me feel violated because our boundaries are merged, right? Like, our boundaries don't exist. They dissolved. We're the same person. I'm projecting something godly and vulnerable into you. And now this other person coming into the picture is threatening that for me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I'm assuming with eight, it has more to do with rejection and just completely cutting off the thing that has made you feel violated and therefore further pushing things into the unconscious. But anywho, so yeah, I wanted to include that as well, just as some material to think about. So then I guess we can kind of go into the types, since I'm already doing that. I guess I can read each one, but like we can stop between each to kind of talk about what we think about it. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's start with the glorified nine. All you nines out there listening. So I have attachment, positive outlook, withdrawn, just to get all the triads into the idea here. Holding is dissociated out into the world. Boundaries are unclear and merged. The inner world co-opts the felt sense, asking others to generate assertiveness and action in order to maintain harmony of autonomy. I like the idea of participation mystique, you know, the beautiful Jungian term that they use, which basically means the unconscious identification. So the participation mystique with nine is, I didn't do anything, end quote, even though their passivity still generates action.
I love watching interviews of people who are nines and they're like super successful, wealthy people. And they're like, oh, you know, I didn't even try. It just happened to me. I'm like, girl.
Yeah. And for that too, I was also thinking about the sneakiness of nine when they're in arguments and they're oh, I didn't do anything. You know, like that kind of,
right.
Like, is this all you?
By not reacting to the argument, they can like win the argument.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause toxic.
Like, well, yeah, this no, is... me? I didn't do it. I didn't start this shit show going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the part where you say the inner world co-opts the felt sense is like probably, to me, the most potent sentence.
Yeah, me too. I think, so bringing it back to the felt sense, what I want to expand on that and get your insight. Nines have a magical superpower of living in their own world. Like, they are a withdrawn type. So their world exists like on a separate plane. For me personally, I think that doesn't allow for much of like integrating the fantasy into reality. It's like, oh, fantasy exists up here. My inner world, you know, has its own little safety container, and it won't. And this is where like the positive outlook kind of like falls off, and I don't relate to, because it's like a feeling of, but that can't be mixed with the outer world, because the outer world is cruel and
it's dirty
and dirty. Yeah. Yeah. And like, I can't, to bring my fantasy into the real world would cause fear and pain and anxiety and stuff like that. So it has to remain somewhere else.
That's really good. Because I think for me, like my inner world, my fantasy, a lot of it is like what I imagine my individuated self is like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like for me to bring that into the world, there's fear about, how will I move about the world with this new felt sense, with this new identity that I feel? And, you know, there's like fears of rejection that come with that. And it's the sense that like this has to be kept separate so that it doesn't get tainted by the realities of the outside world, which is chaos and people making judgments upon you and all this stuff, which is, you know, some social stuff. But, you know, the thing about needing to keep them separate because of the fear, I feel like that's a part that gets ignored sometimes with nines. And I think there's a way too that like keeping it separate is a way, like that's the way that like withdrawing happens, you know, because like if we externalize it, then we're going to be participating too much. People will see us too much. And, you know,
right. Yeah.
It needs to be kept internal. So it's mm-hmm. it's not connected really to physical reality at all, because that would make it too real.
Right.
Can't be too real.
Right. And that's why, like, there's a whole part of you that's like not experienced through the felt sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the felt sense becomes this kind of like confusing thing. And I don't remember where this comes from and like what Enneagram teachers talk about it and who doesn't, whatever. But I remember learning that like the attachment types are like their centers last. So like not, it's, you know, it doesn't go off of like, oh, I'm heart last, blah, blah, blah. Like not that, not your trifix, but just the idea that like 9 is body last. So that's why it's being like externalized. It's like, it's outside of you, you know, that kind of thing. So like, and then, you know, in turn 6 is head last, 3 is heart last. So it's kind of like, that's where the attachment comes in. You're attaching to the external version of your center or something because it's last in your, remember who talks about that. Well, have you ever heard that?
Let's see. I've heard it phrased like slightly differently, but it's the same concept where like the attachment types are the types most disconnected from their center.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Like 6 out of touch with like the head center, 3 out of touch with the heart center, building a false sense of, you know, whatever it might be, security, identity. For 9s, it's, you could barely autonomy. Call it autonomy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of also what I, you know, I see in this sort of theory, the amount of dissociating and allowing the environment or other people to kind of like control your autonomy, essentially, like to sort of move you, like you're disconnected from your own ability to move.
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of have the idea of like, we're unconsciously asking others to generate assertiveness and action. It, under the guise that that's autonomy. So I think of like in your dreams, you have like your triple assertive sister show up a lot. I can imagine, mm-hmm. especially because of the sister thing, like that being a really big shadow, like unconsciously asking her to hold that assertiveness and like sense of movement and action. For me, I've had lots of 7s in my dreams because it's like, you know, I want that that kind of assertiveness and also the spontaneity and joy, because I'm a very kind of like sour and serious individual. And so I think everyone is going to be different, because I also think like not all 9s are going to be like as, you know, quote unquote, withdrawn as, you know, like I see a lot of 9s having action-oriented goals and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be very nuanced in where that would come up. Like even though a 9 might have action-oriented goals, like I'm thinking of, you know, self-pressed social 9s that, you know, create their lifestyle and stuff like that. You know, they may be still unconsciously asking others to hold assertiveness and action, in the sense like if they're social middle, then social becomes like, rather than their own desire to have like a social connection, it just becomes like, oh, my job is going to provide that for me, or, oh, yeah, you know, my family will provide that for me. Like it's, or school or whatever, my environment, my lifestyle is going to provide the thing, rather than being in touch with their own desire to cultivate and act, like activate that instinct on their own. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I think like one thing that came to mind for me that relates to this is that, like even just looking around my room now, it feels like each object, each thing in my environment has like its own, how do I say this? Like in my inner world, it has its own counterpart that only exists on the level of what is positive and soothing and quote unquote good about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that I can hold about what's around me. So when things aren't going right in the environment, I can't take that on. I do need people to hold that other side of it because I can't do it, you know? And right. I think like for other nines who have like different dominant instincts and instinctual stackings, like it's similar. Like maybe for you, it's like every social relationship has like a, it's like positive counterpart in your inner world. And that's mm-hmm. like what you're seeing all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when the negative comes up, I'm just like, you're like, what? Like yeah. I either have to correct them or I correct myself. It's one of the two.
Nine's an interesting type. It's like, it's barely a body type, but it's still, you know what I mean? Like it's like the way I've seen it described is like, it's borrowing from the head and the heart center to make up for the fact that it's so out of touch with its felt sense. Like it's just barely there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, this is also, it could be a very fun activity for nines because you're kind of, I think with being body last as well, and just like nine in general, like you're able to at least kind of see these things in play. So it's like imagining, okay, here's me and here's this like other thing, person, whatever, place, I don't know. Like what am I as like a character in this realm? Like what am I asking this other, this capital O other to be holding for me? I think nines would probably be the easiest to understand this because of the attachment thing and the kind of objectivity that nine can hold. Like where are you merging with or outcasting another part of yourself, and how can you kind of like call that back in, you know? Like I think that would be where nine has a strength in a way, to kind of set the boundary, like actually imagine the boundary being set because it realizes that it's not there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just an idea. I know there are some really grumpy, stubborn nines out there. Anyone listening to this podcast, I would hope is one of those grumpy, stubborn nines. So anyway, yeah. Okay. Let's talk about eight then.
Okay.
Okay. And also too, we might be referring to the others just because of the wings and stuff like this. I don't know how messy it'll get, but with eight, I have rejection, assertive, reactive. So these are the three triads to have and to keep in mind. Holding is cut off into the world. Boundaries are clearly me versus you. Felt sense is hardened so that vulnerability or softness is outcasted. The inner world becomes a fortress, the only source of protection. Asking others to hold aliveness/chaos in order to maintain control of autonomy. The participation mystique for eight would be, it's everyone out there that's acting crazy, even though they caused it. So yeah, rejection, I mean, it's not that foreign to me, but I think in the gut center, it's a bit foreign to me, obviously. So I tried to talk to some people that have a bit more eight in their gut to figure out what it is that rejection's kind of doing that could be unconsciously asking others to hold something for them. So yeah, I feel like this is kind of where the us versus them comes in. Like there is a supposedly clear boundary of like me versus all the other shit. I don't care. I don't want to own at all. So with eight, it can be that realizing that their boundaries are actually blurred and merged, and you are actually unconsciously asking those others, quote unquote, to hold parts of yourself that you've cut off. So it's this kind of like, yes, there's a clear cut off, but that doesn't mean that like you are definitely this and those people are definitely that and there's no merging going on. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is kind of where I even said before, I don't know how true this is at all, but I feel like 8 and rejection in dreams might have a lot more figures that are unfamiliar, like they're not people they know or stuff like that, because it's like the qualities that it's cutting off are so unfamiliar. That even if people you know are holding those qualities, like they could be so outcasted that they're just in a random figure. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're like so obscured, you know, because 8 kind of chaotically obscures things. That's a theory. Don't hold me to it, but it's a theory.
No, I think that's true, because what I had written in the Enneagram School notes is that like 8 is holding the sensory field at bay, projects their life force outwards, numbs the self in advance in order to avoid pain. And so I think it makes sense that in their dreams, these outcasted figures would just be completely foreign to them, not part of them at all, because they're just a complete numbing and hardening. Yeah.
Yeah, and too, that even like keeps the people that they do know, like they're compartmentalizing the people then that they do know. Like, this is the quality I have accepted, or this is the quality that's okay to be around me because it's not threatening me in some way, whereas everyone else is a threatening kind of figure.
Yeah,
and so I think that creates a very large shadow of vulnerability, softness, surrendering, that kind of thing that is attributed to 8. Because it's like the protectiveness feels of 8 feels like they're holding that part of themselves and like keeping it away from others. Like, no, you can't have this. This is delicate and important to me. And that's actually creating a numbness to life. I think, you know, with body, we talk about life force and you know, life, the action in life, how you're interacting with it. So with 8 thinking that like, this is a part of me no one can see or hold or whatever, it rejects life in general and creates a kind of numbness or dissociation to it. Which then that kind of like overactiveness that 8 takes on is that overcompensation for this part of themselves that isn't really being nurtured, you know? One of the things that I think of with 8 too, being the like gut and the head and heart last, it's like 8s also like completely like reject reality. Like, I think every body type is like denying reality in some way. That's where the dissociation occurs. But with 8, it's like they have that thing of like, you know, these people are this and like those people are that, when they're the ones that are creating the narrative. And like it's not being proven in any way. It's just like their narrative that they gut know is like the reality that everyone should be paying attention to and subscribe to. And it's like, that's not what's actually happening. So it's like that kind of, that like where, I don't know, like, where is that? Like you're like unconsciously at like that. Okay. That is why then the vulnerability becomes something that needs to be hidden and protected, because it's like they're creating their own enemies. Like, they're creating a need for something to be locked away and and hidden and safe and whatever, because it's like these enemies are like, you know, real to them.
That's really good. Oh my gosh, I've definitely experienced that with members of my family who are all 8 fixers. I'm like, this is your projection. This isn't actually what's going on right now, you know?
Exactly. And that's why it's like, when it comes to then, what are you asking people to hold? It's like, you're kind of asking people to hold then like the sort of like, sorry, this is like so backwards for me to think about, because like, like I'm not, I don't have 8 in me. Yeah. Oh, like, I think it just goes back to, like, people are soft and vulnerable and, like, you know, you're asking people to kind of hold that because then you can reiterate the fact that, like, they need to just be cut off, outcasted, whatever, you know, that sort of, or that they're threatening or in some kind of way that other people are also the chaos. Yeah. So also with that, yeah, with the unconscious identification, it's everyone out there that's acting crazy, even though they caused it. I think this is where we can see that eights, you know, stir the pot quite often. And that kind of like unconsciously activates people like to fill the role that they're denying in themselves, you know? I think even 9-wing 8s can do this just, it happened with Kaisa and I, with our anger participation mystique that her and I got into, is that she tried to activate the pain in me because she didn't want to hold the pain herself. She wanted me to feel the pain that she was kind of unconsciously asking everyone else to hold for her, you know? Yeah. So that's another thing I think of too, is just kind of looking, it's so like, I hope I'm explaining it right, but like it's backwards.
I know it's hard to explain because it's so different, but you did a really good job. That's good. I think the Kaisa example is actually good at explaining what happened or what's going on with 8, even though it's only 9-wing 8, it's still pretty strong.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with 9-wing 8, it is kind of a blend of the two. Like, they're very subtly causing chaos because they're not like owning the fact that that's what they're doing. Yeah. But they're like subtly pushing people. And then completely disowning the fact that they even tried to do it in the first place. So then when another person is getting activated about it, the 9-wing 8 can be like, yo, chill. Yo, what's up with you? And it's like, you're making me do this, you know? Yeah. So I think it's that question of like, where is the life force that the 8 is trying to get in touch with having people or things, places, experiences, like, participate in that kind of blurred boundary with you, like, then, like, where's the life force really coming from, or like, where is it trying to go, what's it trying to move to, because this is the body center, we're moving towards something, like, what are we moving towards by kind of setting up our environment in that way, and I think by looking at what you're unconsciously asking people to hold, is where you can kind of get in, make room for those parts of yourself, so they're not all cut off. Like, you can make the room for, like, I am, you know, these things, rather than pushing it out into other people. And it's not always, I think with the body center work too, it's not always a comfortable thing, obviously. Like, it's not comfortable to admit the parts of yourself that you've outcasted or cut off or merged with or whatever. And that's why I think like the work isn't really to have this sudden insight, like, you know, this like, aha, now I feel better kind of thing. It is really just to make that space for things that are uncomfortable, and just know that like consciously know that that's there. So then it doesn't unconsciously participate in life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then let's go to 1. I have frustration, superego, competency. So now we know that that's what it is. The triads. I have holding is crystallized and picked at within the outer world. Boundaries feel violated and disturbed. Felt sense feels the need to correct in order to return to a state of content. The inner world is the only source of accurate direction/guidance. asking others to hold uncertainty / ignorance in order to maintain order of autonomy. The participation mystique of the one is, quote, you're fucking up and uncertain, end quote, even though their guidance isn't necessary or correct.
Yeah, that's frustration with sensory field and holding. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one has a really hard time numbing itself to the sensory field. They can't let go of what's bothering them in their holding.
Mm-hmm.
They have to fix it.
Yeah. They have to fix it because then it feels like they're resolving something in themselves because their boundaries are blurred. They're dissociated by doing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one was easier for me to feel into because I also, not only because I have a one wing, I also know someone in life that is a one that I've seen this actively happen. Whereas eight, yeah, I don't hang out that much around eights to really feel it in the environment as much as I do with one. So, and one fixers, I think, are sometimes a bit more. Actually, no, I do know quite a bit of eight fixers. But yeah, I think that correctness, that violation feels a lot more because with one, it's like you still are kind of letting things in, but then it becomes immediately like an irritant. It becomes a thing that it's like, ooh, I don't like that I fucking let this thing in. I need to do something about it. And so I think knowing that too, that idea that you're asking other people then to hold that uncertainty and ignorance, because we also have to remember with ones, kind of going off of, oh, like with eights, real quick, eights have like that heart last in this theory that I can't remember where it comes from. Mm. So that's where like the vulnerability, the softness, that heart is way more at threat here, or way more focused on with the eight. Whereas with ones, they are head last. So that's where that guidance of the super ego, the competency comes in. So they think that they are the gut and heart, like they are the source of guidance. And they're really not. So they're projecting, they're unconsciously asking others to hold their own uncertainty of guidance, their own fear of what that means. And so it's kind of like, that's why everyone becomes the person, or everything becomes the thing that is quote unquote wrong or bad or unsure. And therefore they can reiterate that they are the ones, like, I'm the one here that knows. So like with eight, I am the one here that feels life, that knows it, that has control over it in that way. One is like, I'm the one that feels the guidance, that knows it, that controls it in some kind of way. So yeah, that's those then that flavor the nine, depending on the wing.
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so they're unconsciously asking others to kind of hold their uncertainty and ignorance. I think that's why with dream figures, I'm sure ones, one fixers, one wings will probably have lots of people that they know. And I'm going to assume also because I have seen this in one influenced dreams that actively the dream ego is trying to correct the other person or the environment or the experience, whatever it may be. And so it kind of like shows that because the dream figure or environment or whatever is a part of the one, like that is the part of them that they're interacting with. They're having a participation with that in life. So I think then with the one, it's making space for the things that are unsavory and uncertain and unsure and confused and what, and not, you know, aware of what to do, doesn't have guidance, like allowing room for those experiences and places and people that you're asking to hold that for you.
Mm. That's good.
And I think all of this feels very intense. I think because with the body, it's like when we're not in touch with our felt sense and everything, like the body is dissociated and interacting with this world of mixed boundaries, merged boundaries, characters, inner parts of ourselves, like the threat feels real. Like when you're dissociated from your felt sense and you're just living up in the head in some kind of way, and you're not taking the time to really establish where you end and another person begins or another thing begins, whatever, like where the boundaries are. Yeah, things become very threatening. They feel very threatening. They're perceived to be threatening. Your sense of safety, they're threatening your sense of safety because of that being in the body. So yeah, I think that's another thing to keep in mind and consider is just that, like, it's uncomfortable and it's hard and it's backwards to think about because you're so like used to what you perceive. And I think just along with the idea of social shadow work and stuff, like this is kind of how you make space for all of those things. Let the body kind of expand into, let the body expand to include these things. Just to be inclusive of these things. You don't need to do anything to them. You don't need to correct them. It's not going to correct you as a person. I'm speaking on behalf of the one influence. It's not going to threaten your boundaries you think you've established for eights or like whatever. It's literally just being like, okay, that's there. I've made room for it. Yeah. That's what I think about it. I think too, just to kind of go on the, like, this is why I think with each center, they can be present in each instinct. So I kind of gave a little bit of, what like the sexual instinct might be in this as well, being the kind of overlap of the body. But also I think that's why, even then with sexual lasts, like they're unconsciously asking others to like hold their desires as well. And I think that's like where the body can also feel a bit numb and dissociated from its life force, depending on where sexual instinct is. I feel like it'll probably be the same work for everybody, but especially for like sexual blinds, like getting in touch with your personal sense of sexuality and life force and stuff. Like there might be a lot that is blocking you from that if it's kind of being seen as something external. Like it's, you know, we talk about the blind spot and how like we kind of think we have to like do it the way that other people do it. So it's like, oh, well, you know, externally it looks like this, so I should just do that. But that's like, it's not really in touch with your own sense of it. And so it's kind of still asking others to hold it for you. And so therefore, like other people, places, experiences become what you associate with that instinct. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So also just keeping that in mind, depending, and I think that helps when dream figures come up. Is this a social thing? Is this a sexual thing? Whatever, is it both? Knowing that like, okay, there's something that like wants to interact with me right now. And it's something of my own, but like, am I projecting it externally? And then how can I kind of integrate that, call it back, you know, whatever it may be. But that's just a thought too.
Yeah.
And self-pres, I think it's just a little kind of like wonky in that like it's kind of like your environment becomes these like gods that you're like that are attracting you for some reason, something mergy about it in that way. And kind of being curious as to like, what is it about these kind of comfort objects or people that are simultaneously making me dissociated from my own, you know, ability to hold. Like, I'm just like being really basic here, but if you have a really comfy home or if like scrolling on your phone is really comfy or something, or like spending time with the same friends all the time is really comfy, then it's like you're kind of asking your environment to hold all of like, to hold kind of like the mothering of you and all of the good stuff. And so when you're in a bad situation and all of the good stuff is gone, then it's like, I have no life force here or something like that. You know, that confusion.
There's no way to contain it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think you're just looking at the instincts is a fun thing to do too. And especially in dreams, it's like we're going in a great chronological order for this. Yeah.